Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Katie Weaver, Brian Lynn, and Susan Shand. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
American government lawyers on Tuesday charged 49 people in a $25 million plot to reportedly buy admission to top colleges. The schools involved include Yale, Stanford, and Georgetown University. Those charged include Hollywood actors Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin, test administrators, business leaders, and college coaches. Federal lawyers in Boston accused William Singer of organizing the reported plot. Singer owns the college counseling business, Edge College and Career Network, as well as an organization called the Key Worldwide Foundation. The lawyers said Singer offered people up to $75,000 to take college entrance exams for students. They also accused him of paying college coaches to accept students as sports players, even if they had never played the sport. In some cases, the lawyers said, Singer worked with parents to create false academic and athletic successes for the students, including putting students' faces on the images of real athletes in action. U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling said the plot was set up to guarantee admissions to top colleges for students, in his words, not on their merits, but through fraud. Lelling said Singer used Key Worldwide Foundation as a front for parents to pay for the services. He said parents paid $100,000 to $6.5 million for the services. Some of the parents reportedly claimed the payment as charitable donations to lower their taxes. Lelling said Singer then used the money to bribe college coaches and test administrators. Lelling said Yale University's women's soccer coach took $400,000 to accept a student who did not even play soccer at a competitive level. That student's family reportedly paid Singer $1.2 million for the service. Lelling called the plot the biggest college admissions scam ever prosecuted by the U.S. Justice Department. The accused parents reportedly sought to help their children get admitted to schools, including University of California, Los Angeles, University of Southern California, and University of Texas. However, Lelling said the colleges were not involved in the plot. Singer is reportedly planning to admit guilt to the charges. Lelling also charged 33 parents with involvement in the plot. They included actors Felicity Huffman, known for her role in the television show Desperate Housewives, and Lori Loughlin, who appeared in another long-running show called Full House. Among wealthy business leaders charged were Manuel Enriquez, the chief of Hercules Capital, Gamal Abdelaziz, president of Wynn Resorts Development, Gordon Kaplan, head of the well-known international law firm Wilkie Farr and Gallagher, and Gregory Abbott, founder and chairman of International Dispensing Company. During a phone call with one wealthy parent, Singer reportedly said of his business, "What we do is help the wealthiest families in the U.S. get their kids into school." I'm Katie Weaver.
The man credited with inventing the World Wide Web 30 years ago is calling for major changes to make it better for humanity. Tim Berners-Lee spoke about the current state of the web during a 30th anniversary event Tuesday in Geneva, Switzerland. He wrote the first proposal on creating a new system for organizing information. He sent that proposal to a supervisor on March 12, 1989. The anniversary event was held at CERN, the European Organization for Nuclear Research. This is the research center where Berners-Lee was working as a computer engineer when he developed his ideas for the World Wide Web. His proposal sought to create a way for computers across the world to communicate with each other. The British computer scientist, now 63, had the idea for the Hypertext Transfer Protocol, the HTTP, in front of each website address. The HTTP system enabled the sending and receiving of written information and small images through a software program that became the first web browser. This browser prepared the way for internet availability for large numbers of people through home computers. The CERN anniversary event celebrated how the creation of the World Wide Web launched a technological revolution that improved life in many ways. It forever changed the way people get information, share ideas, buy goods, and do work. But Berners-Lee told the event that many people, including himself, believe the web has fallen short in many areas and created new, serious problems. In an open letter published Tuesday, Berners-Lee noted that 30 years after its invention, the web is used by half the world's population. Berners-Lee said the web had clearly created great opportunities for humanity to progress and made life easier for millions of people. It also has given groups traditionally not heard a new voice in society. However, he added that the web had also provided new ways for scammers to carry out crimes and given a voice to those who spread hatred. Against the backdrop of news stories about how the web is misused, it's understandable that many people feel afraid and unsure if the web is really a force for good, he wrote. Berners-Lee told reporters that some political events in recent years also led many people to distrust the web. "They are all stepping back, realizing that this web thing that they thought was cool is actually not necessarily serving humanity very well, he said. Berners-Lee created a group called the World Wide Web Foundation. It seeks help from governments, companies, and citizens to become more involved in shaping the web to do more good for humanity. His actual plan is called the Contract for the Web. Under this contract, governments are called on to take steps to make sure all citizens can connect to the Internet and that individual privacy is respected. Businesses are asked to keep Internet prices low so many people can use the web. In addition, companies should respect privacy and develop technologies that aim to put people and the public good first. The plan also calls on citizens to create materials for the web and cooperate with others to make sure there is rich, quality information for everyone. In addition, citizens should seek to build strong communities that respect civil discourse and human dignity. The path to make the Internet better is the responsibility of everyone who uses it, Berners-Lee said. Making big changes will not be easy, but will be very well worth it in the end, he added. If we give up on building a better web now, then the web will not have failed us. We will have failed the web, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
A British-led research team has sent its first live television-quality video transmission from a two-person submersible vehicle. Team members entered two submersibles, which slowly went down into waters off the coast of the Seychelles on Tuesday. The aim of the project is to document changes taking place in the Indian Ocean. Heavy seasonal storms and strong underwater currents continued to present problems at greater depths during the study. The AP used optical video techniques to transmit the pictures through the waves by using the blue part of the electromagnetic spectrum. Before now, real-time video transmissions from the world's deep oceans were live streams. This means they were sent from unmanned subsea vehicles that were operated on land. The video was sent through fixed fiber optic wiring. The new transmission uses the latest wireless technology. The signal came from 60 meters down. The Associated Press is the only news agency working with British scientists from the Necton research team on its deep sea project. The researchers hope to open up the secrets of the Indian Ocean, one of the world's least explored areas. The team of scientists is gathering information to help policymakers to create environmental protection measures. Oliver Steeds is the director of the study. He said the experience of battling the waves shows the need to expand scientific knowledge of the waters off the Seychelles. The problem is, when it comes to this place, when it came to the currents, the most recent current records are from 1882, he said. The study is expected to last 7 weeks until April 19th. I'm Susan Shand.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Rutherford Hayes was sworn into office as the 19th President of the United States in 1877. Hayes, a Republican, became president after a disputed election. Representatives of his party and the Democrats met secretly to work out a compromise. The Democrats agreed to let Hayes be sworn in. In return, he agreed to end federal support of radical Republican governments in the South. He promised to name Southerners to his cabinet and other important jobs. And he said he would provide more federal aid for schools and railroads in the South. As part of the agreement, Hayes promised not to act aggressively to support the civil rights of black Southerners. Steve Ember and Richard Rail tell the story of Rutherford Hayes.
Rutherford Hayes was born in Ohio in 1822. He was a good student at Kenyon College and at Harvard Law School. He opened a law office in Cincinnati. When he was 30 years old, he married Lucy Webb. Later, he served as an officer in the Union Army during America's Civil War. He was elected to the United States House of Representatives. He also served as governor of Ohio. In this job, he helped establish the college that became Ohio State University.
Hayes was a Republican. In 1876, he was the party's compromise candidate for president. His opponent in the national election was Democrat Samuel Tilden. Tilden won more popular votes than Hayes. In the American political system, whoever wins the most popular votes in a state usually gets all the electoral votes of that state. In 1876, both the Republicans and Democrats claimed the electoral votes of three southern states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina. So it was not clear at first who had won the presidential election.
Congress appointed a committee to decide the issue. The committee had a Republican majority. It gave the disputed electoral votes to Hayes. He won the election by just one electoral vote. The results came just a few days before the inauguration. Democrats protested that the Republicans had stolen the election. Yet they agreed to accept Hayes as president. In exchange, Hayes and the Republicans agreed to accept Democratic Party policies on several issues. Hayes's administration would deal mainly with national, not international, problems.
At first, people wondered, would President Hayes keep the promises that were made to help him win the election? Most thought he would not. Hayes surprised everyone. In his inaugural speech, he promised to put the country ahead of the party. He said, "He serves his party best who serves his country best." Party leaders told Hayes which men to appoint to his cabinet. He refused and made his own choices. He ordered federal troops to withdraw from South Carolina and Louisiana. The troops had been there since the end of the Civil War. He also helped Southern Democrats establish new governments in their states.
Republican Party leaders criticized President Hayes. Anti-slavery groups also criticized him. They said former black slaves in the South had gained a lot under Republican rule. Now, they said, these black Americans would lose everything. Hayes did not agree. He had received promises that the new Democratic state governments would protect the rights of black Americans. It was not to be. White Democrats kept political control in some southern states for many years. They often denied civil rights to black citizens. Only with the rise of the civil rights movement in the 1950s would the situation begin to change.
After becoming president, Rutherford Hayes announced that he would serve just one term. He wanted to make serious reforms in the federal government. This would be easier to do if he did not have to worry about getting reelected. Hayes started by changing the system that employed people in government jobs. Party leaders usually had great power to fill government jobs. They used the jobs to reward loyal party workers and to increase their own political strength. President Hayes demanded that federal jobs be given to people because of their abilities, not because they supported a politician.
At that time, the best jobs were with the Customs Service of the Treasury Department. The people who collected customs, taxes on imports, could keep part of the money they collected. President Hayes took action against the Customs Service office in New York City. One of the men removed from the job there was James Garfield. Garfield would later become president of the United States. Hayes also banned all federal workers from taking part in political organizations, conventions, and campaigns. And he said politicians no longer could demand campaign money from federal workers.
Rutherford Hayes showed more political strength during a nationwide railroad strike. The strike began during his first summer as president. For several years, the nation had suffered from a serious economic depression. 3 million people were out of work. Factories and businesses reduced the pay of those who still had jobs. Workers with the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad protested. They took control of many areas along the railroad. They refused to let the trains move. The strike spread to other railroads. In some places, the strikes turned into riots, and the riots became violent. Some governors ordered their state armed forces to intervene. The state forces were not strong enough, however. So the governors asked President Hayes for help. He immediately sent federal troops to troubled cities. The troops stopped the riots and ended the strikes.
Another issue during Hayes's administration involved a railroad in the western United States. It was both a labor problem and an immigration problem. Thousands of Chinese workers had been brought to America to help build the Central Pacific Railroad. After the railroad was built, many of them remained. Most settled in California. Others came from China to join them. These immigrants competed with white workers for jobs. Whites protested because the Chinese agreed to work for less money. They said this kept wages down for all workers.
The white workers asked Congress for a law to stop Chinese workers from coming to the United States. Members of Congress from both parties wanted the support of these voters, so they quickly passed a bill that made it much more difficult for Chinese citizens to come to live in the United States. The bill said the president must cancel part of a treaty between the United States and China. That part of the treaty permitted citizens of each country to settle in the other country.
President Hayes vetoed the bill. He said the United States had proposed the treaty. So, he said, the United States could not change it without agreement from China. Hayes did agree, however, that some action was necessary. So he opened negotiations with the Chinese government. He won an agreement to limit the number of Chinese who could enter the United States.
During the administrations of Andrew Johnson and Ulysses Grant, Congress had weakened many powers of the president. Congress had become the strongest of the three branches of American government. Throughout his administration, Rutherford Hayes worked hard to strengthen presidential powers. For example, the United States Constitution gives the president power to veto bills passed by Congress. In the 1800s, Congress tried to prevent presidential vetoes. It used a method of attaching riders to legislative proposals. This is how the method works.
Congress considers a bill the president believes is necessary. Then it joins that bill to a measure the president would veto if passed separately. The extra measure is called a rider to the first bill. To get the bill he wants, the president must accept the rider, too. President Hayes refused to sign any bills with riders. So the Congress, during his administration, stopped using the method. Congresses since then have used it successfully.
Rutherford Hayes kept his promise to serve only 4 years. He did not regret his decision. After leaving office in 1881, he said he was satisfied with what he had done. He looked back on his administration and wrote, "I left this country prosperous and happy. I left the party of my choice strong, victorious, and united. In serving the country, I served my party." He died in 1893.
Hayes was right in saying that the United States was strong and prosperous. The late 1800s were a time of growth for the nation.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.